Okay, so we're back to Megillas Esther, skipping Truma. We'll probably skip Tetzaveh next week, and here we go. So the Megillah is a complicated book. It really, really, really is, because the more we read it, the more we learn it, the more we realize that it is not what we were taught when we were little kids. When we were little kids, it was a nice story with it's a good start, maybe, a bad middle, and a great ending, and the Jews are saved. And then as we get older, we realize that the Megillah actually is a very deep book. It's not just a story of a crazy king who has a Jewish wife who ends up dealing with some psychopath of a Mishneh LeMelech. But there really is a lot buried in there. So what I want to try to do tonight is address a theme of the Megillah. And Rabbi Liebtag says that one of the themes of the Megillah is satire. The thing is that I, unlike Rabbi Liebtag, is not a... I don't know some of the less learned books of Tanakh at all. And even the better books of Tanakh, I definitely don't know as well as he does. So there are things that you can pick up on the Megillah that you wouldn't necessarily know if you did not know these less known books. So that's what we're going to do today. So we're going to focus in on four psukim. They are four psukim that seem to announce the good news that there is a Jewish person out there who's important, and it introduces Esther, who is going to be the one that's going to save the Jewish people. I want to take a look at these psukim, especially the first one, Pasuk Hey, which is a pasuk that we all say out loud. So that's exciting. But when we say it, maybe there is deeper meaning in it. So let's take a look at Pasuk Hey. There was a Jewish man in Shushan HaBira, and his name is Mordechai ben Ya'ir ben Shimi ben Kish Ish Yemini. Okay, so the first point to note in this pasuk is the fact that we're given a long list of his family, Mordechai ben Ya'ir ben Shimi ben Kish. And he's an Ish Yemini, he's from Binyamin, but he's also an Ish Yehudi, he's a Jewish man, so that seems to be in conflict. Is he an Ish Yehudi from Yehuda, or is he an Ish Yemini from Binyamin? Okay, we've discussed that in the past, we're going to skip that. But what do we do with Ushmo Mordechai? His name is Mordechai. So actually, I think I've bothered my mother about this in the past. But this year I was like more blatant. I just grabbed like three sentences from Rabbi Liebtag and like WhatsApped it to her. But he points out that Mordechai is probably, which is pretty funny because I think just on this screen right here, three of us are Mordechais, right? I think Mati also.
My middle name is Mordechai.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Four of six. Wow. Okay. Well, Greg and Shmuel, you guys are lucky because this doesn't apply to you then. But Mordechai is about as this. I think this is pretty much what Rabbi Liebtag says. You could not pick a more revolting name to give to your child. Mordechai, which is named after the Persian god Marduk. So could you imagine that here you have this guy whose father is Ya'ir? We know that's a very Jewish name. Shimi, it's a Tanakh name. Kish is a Tanakh name. And we get Mordechai. Now, the good news I feel like is thousands of years later, because we're like a good 2,500 years or more after the story of Purim, is Mordechai has been accepted into the list of acceptable Jewish names. Not only acceptable, but it's like, it's a good one. That's what my mother's response was to what Rabbi Liebtag said. She's like, yeah, it's a good, nice, strong name. I'm like, I guess it ended up that way, so that's a good thing. At that point, my mother actually ended the conversation, so I guess she didn't appreciate it. But yeah, how do you end up having, he's the Gadol Hador, And yet his name is as Persian as it gets. And again, it'd be one thing if you had a Persian name that was not offensive, but to take a Persian name that is named after the gods, so that's pretty rough. Okay, so now we continue with Pasuk Vav.
What's also interesting is he's born before the power of Persia. He's born with Nebuchadnezzar's gullus. He left Yerushalayim already old enough in Nebuchadnezzar.
Well, I think that's an important question to also wonder. I think that each year I learn the Megillah, I have a better sense of the timetable. If Mordechai actually did leave when he left, and he went out with Yechaniah, that would be, let's say, a few years before. I think it's somewhere around 12 years, but maybe I've got the numbers wrong. Before the actual exile, you're talking about, and now this is after Koresh let the Jews go back. So you're talking about a good 100 years or so. So assuming that he even remembers the exile, so he'd have to be 4 or 5 years old, you're talking about Mordechai being very, very, very old, which means that you could read it that Ushmo Mordechai ben Ya'ir ben Shimi ben Kish Ishimini Asher Hagla, that maybe one of his descendants, one of his forefathers, was the one that was went out in exile with Yechaniah. I just think it's something to ponder. I certainly, as a kid, the way I learned this was that Achashverosh took place before the 70 years were up and before the Jews went back. So, okay, it's 60-something years. So now, if Mordechai was 15 years old, he's 75. I don't know. It's just something that I think it's something to note. Pasuk Vav. Asher Haglam Yerushalayim Yim Hagola, Asher Haglam Toim Yechaniah Melech Yehuda, Asher Haglam Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. I'm sure that everybody can guess what the Mila Mancha in that pasuk is.
Gullus.
Yeah, he went out in the exile from Yerushalayim, that was exiled with Yechaniah, the king of Yehudah, that was exiled by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel. So it's a good question why the pasuk is so strongly emphasizing the Gaulus. You probably could have written it a little bit shorter. Ashaglam Yerushalayim, im Yechaniah melech Yehudah, asher hagla Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel. You can certainly get rid of two of them, and maybe you could even get rid of a third if you're a little bit more creative with the psukim. And he was he was taking care of Hadassah, who is Esther, who is Bat Dodo, the daughter of his uncle. Ki ein la av aim, she has no parents. And she was Vanara Tova Yifator Vetovat Mareh Vibotavia Vimal Kacham Mordechai Lo Devat. And the girl was beautiful, and when her parents died, Mordechai adopted her as a daughter. When they heard what the king's decree was, and his law, and the fact that he was collecting many girls in Shushan Abira, she was taken to the house of the king under the hands of Hegai. Okay? So she was taken against her will, and then she ends up with the king. Okay, so let's just point out some of the strange things in the Pasuk. So if you take a look at Zechariah, Perechet, Pasuk of Gimel, I think it's the first time in my life that I took a look at Zechariah, certainly that Pasuk. Actually, the first time I looked at it, I think 3 weeks ago for a Pasuk or two, but here we go. Kom Hashem Tzakot Bayimim Ahem Asher Yachazigu Asaran Hashem Yikol Lashonot HaGoyim. And so says God, it will be in those days that 10 men from the languages of the non-Jews, presumably we're talking about non-Jews here, will take the knaf, they'll grab onto the knaf, the corner of the clothing of an Ish Yehudi, Leimor Nelchai Mechem Kishamanu Elokim Imachem. We will go with you because we have heard that God is with you. So it sounds like they're going up to Israel, going up to Yerushalayim. 10 non-Jews are going back to Yerushalayim. Ish Yehudi. They are the only two times in all of Tanakh that we have the words Ish Yehudi. Mordechai. And this story in Zechariah of 10 Jews, or 10 non-Jews rather, that want to cling to a Jewish person. Okay, so that's our first point on this, on these psukim. And then Divrei Yamim Chavtet Aleph, Vayomer David HaMelech L'chol HaKahal. So David says to all of the people, Shlomo Bini Echad Bachar Bo Elokim Nar Varach. So Shlomo, one of my sons, was chosen by God. He's young. The Hamlacha Gdola, and the work is great. Ki lo le'adam habira, ki l'shem Elokim. Because this area, the Beis Hamikdash, the Bira, does not belong to man, it belongs to God. So I don't know if this is the only other time that we have the word Bira. Divrei Hayamim, keep in mind, was written by Ezra and the Anshei Knesset Agdola, that time period. So they have access to words that were not necessarily in the rest of Tanakh. But Bira, which we know from our psukim here, Shushan HaBira. So the word Bira appears in reference to the Beis HaMikdash. And yet in Pasuk Hey, it's Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan HaBira. So the question is there any connection? The fact that Shushan HaBira and the Bira, which is the Beis HaMikdash, are kind of referenced to each other. Okay. So let's take a look at the next source. So there is an interesting Gemara. I think it's a Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara, what it tries to do is it tries to find biblical sources for many of the things in Tanakh. So it says, Haman min haTorah minayin, Esther min haTorah minayin. So when it asks, where do we find Esther in the Torah? So the Gemara in Chulin says, for the pasuk of Anochi Aster Astir Panai, that I will hide my face. So first off, it's not exactly Esther, it's Astir, as opposed to where by Haman it says Haman in a Torah Ninayin, and then it says Hamin Ha'eit. So at least it's the same letters. Here we have an extra letter. But what does this mean? Anochi Aster Astir, how does that connect? So Esther means hidden. And here it says, "Anochi Aster Astir Panai Bayomahu Kol Arash Asaki Panai Lelim Achirim." God says to us in Perek Lamin Aleph, which I believe is Parshat Hazinu, I will hide my face on that day from you, from all the bad that you did, because you turned to other gods. So usually, when we think about the idea of Hester Panim, we don't think of it as a good thing, but on the other hand, we say like, oh, it's a sign that God is watching us. So we had this discussion at the Shabbos table last week. What does that exactly mean? And so we said that there's a pasuk, I think Malki said this, there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that says, talks about Hashem and says, Mashkiach min hachalonot meitzitz min hacharakim. Mashkiach min hachalonot, he's looking through the window, meitzitz min hacharakim, and he's peeking through the cracks. So I heard years ago a great explanation of it is that when God is when we're in a good place with God, so it's mashkiach min hachalonot, the window is open, we are the children, God is the Father, and we could see, you know, we could see, or God is the king and we are the servants, but we could see that the king, our father, is looking out towards us. But when there's Hester upon him, meitzitz min hacharakim, is that God is peeking through the cracks. So as the child, as the servant who's outside, we don't see God looking at us. And yet the promise of God is meitzitz min hacharakim, that even in those moments, God is still watching out for us. So I always looked at that as that's Hester Panim. So Hester Panim is actually like it's a promise that even though God will get angry at us, it's going to happen. It's a promise in Devarim. Nonetheless, God will keep an eye out on us. The thing is, if you look at the psukim that precede Hester Asir Panai Pasuk Yud Chet, the next two psukim, you'll see that, right, the two psukim that preceded are the next two on the sources. Sorry, I just want to clarify that. They don't sound very good. So, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Nchash Ochev Matecha, God says, Moshe, you're gonna be in the ground. V'kam ha'mazev zanach ha'reilu Elohei nechara aretz, asher hu v'asham v'kirbo v'azavani v'efer b'riti asher karati ito. God says that they're going to sin, and the Jews are going to stray from the path of that I put them in front of them, and I will leave them, and I will get vazavani, and they will leave me, right? Vazavani.
Vazavani.
Yeah, I will leave them.
To Vayelach.
Okay, Vehefebriti Asher Karatito, and I will get rid of my covenant that I made with them. And on that day I will leave them, I'll hide my face from them, and they will be consumed. And they'll be in a terrible place. And then the Jews will declare, this is all happening because God is not with us. So it doesn't sound so great. What it sounds like is the idea of Hester Panim is that the Jews as a nation will survive, but the people not necessarily will make it, right? So the idea that Esther is astir, that God will hide himself from us, doesn't really seem to be consistent with the Megillah, because the Megillah ends up having God hides himself for what? Just a really little bit. Just long enough for Haman to do his decree, and then what ends up happening? Shortly thereafter, the Jews are saved and has a happy ending. But that's not really consistent with the story of Esther in the Torah. Okay, so
let's... Isn't the whole point that Hashem was present but hidden throughout?
Yeah, but if the idea is Hester Panim, meaning Hester Panim sounds more like the Holocaust than the Megillah. Right, the Jews will be forsaken. Really bad things will happen. Like, what really happens in the Megillah? I mean, there is a lot of anxiety. The Jews think they're all going to die, but it never even comes close to that. In fact, by the time the decree rolls around, not only isn't it an issue, but the Jews rout many, 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 many Persians and members of the kingdom, and they also take for themselves. There is all the spoils of war that they don't take it. So it seems like things are going pretty well for the Jews by the time that rolls around. So it doesn't necessarily seem to be consistent. Okay, so we've got a lot of questions so far. What's the connection to Zechariah with the Ishiudi? What's the deal with Bira? What's the deal with Hester Panim? So let's take a look at one more source. Yirmiyahu Chavtet. So Kicho Amar Hashem Ki Lefi Melot Lebavel Shivim Shana Efkodetchem. When 70 years come to pass, I will remember you. Vakimot Elechem Devari Atov Lashivetchem Al Makom Hazeh. And I will bring you back to this place. Ki Anochi Yadati Et Machshavot Asher Ani Choshev Aleichem Num Hashem Machshavot Shalom V'lo Ra'a Latet Lechem Achri V'Tikva. God says that I know that in the end I want it to be good and I want it to be peaceful and I don't want bad to happen to you. And you'll come to me and you'll die, you'll daven to me and you'll listen to me. You'll find me, because you'll look for me with your whole heart. And you'll all come back, and you'll return to the place that you were exiled from. So it sounds nice. It sounds great. 70 years are going to come, and you're going to all go back. The problem is that 70 years do come back, and it doesn't seem to be so simple that they just come back. Now, exile is...
Also, Vikibaksti Eskan, that didn't really happen. That's almost like we're passive and God's being active.
Right. It seems to be that Koresh is like, go home. And then, I don't know, some Jews go home. And they're Mekayim, the last Pasuk. They go, Yudalit, right? They go back to the places that they left. They go back to their old ancestral cities. But it does not seem, if you know, the idea of Kibbutz Galio, that hopefully very soon Mashiach will come and we'll all come home. And, you know, from the Arva Kamfos Aretz, you know, I picture it nowadays. I'm sure they pictured it years ago differently. I picture it that Elal, will slap its logo on a lot of planes because it won't have enough planes to do this with. And from whatever corner of the world we're coming, there are going to be charters of lots and lots and lots of direct flights that are going to just be landing every, whatever it is, every couple minutes in Ben Gurion until it's all good. Although maybe by then we'll have like the full borders of Israel. So maybe they'll land in Amman also. I don't know. It's probably if you got to get to Yericho, it's probably quicker to go from Amman to Yericho than from Ben Gurion. But okay, whatever it is, it does not seem to, like, that's Kibbutz Galios. That's what we hope will happen. This is like trips of people come back. Not exactly. So exile is not forever, right? The idea that one will be in exile. If one is in exile forever, they're not in exile. They're just permanently displaced. The idea is that exile is not supposed to be permanent. But the people actually need to be eager to return. They have to actually want to go back. And yet Koresh allows them to go back, and only a few go back. So let's take a look at the Kuzari. The Kuzari says something amazing. He says, had the entire nation enthusiastically answered the divine call to return to the land, the idyllic prophecies, the return to Zion would have been fulfilled and the Shekhinah would have returned. Right? If everybody had listened to the invite of Koresh and they had all come back, it would have been very different. In reality, however, only a small portion returned. The majority remained in Bavel, willfully accepting the exile as they did not wish to leave their homes and businesses, etc., says the Kuzari. It's a sad reality that the Jews did not take advantage of the opportunity to come back. The Liebtag says, now let's return to the beginning. Let's understand what is going on here. So Ishu di ayav shushan habira. What is the connection between Ishu di and Ishudi of Zechariah? It sounds like in Zechariah there is an Ishudi, and he's the leader. And who's following him back? Non-Jews. Ishudi ayav Shushan Abira. There was a leader in Shushan, and the Jews are following him in there. The Megillah is a satire. It is it's saying in a way to knock the Jews. Look, there was another Ishudi, and that Ishudi was followed back to Israel. And here you have an Ishudi who's the leader of the Jewish people who is in exile, even though he doesn't have to be. And the Jews are not with him. Bira, what happened? The Jews switched. They were willing to trade one Bira for another. They were willing to trade the Bira of the Beis HaMikdash, as Dirayam says, for living in Shushan HaBira, the capital of the Persian Empire. Okay, let's take a look at the last source, because I think the last source drives this home even more. But before we go to the last source, let's just ask a question. Do we really need to know the details of Vashti HaMalka? Do we really need to know she made a party? She was deposed? If the story had actually started in Perek Bet, would the story be any worse? There was a need for a queen, and so what happens? Ahasuerus does this whole thing. Now you want to say that it shows you it gives you an eye into the psychology of Ahasuerus. Fine. You want to say that it gives you an eye into the fear that Esther has as a queen in going in front of the king, wondering, is she going to suffer the same fate as Vashti? Okay, also, maybe. But in general, we don't really need the story of Vashti. What does Vashti's story add? So let's take a look at it. She also made a party, but as bad as the people were, and as lowly as they were spiritually and in their behavior, especially if you add the Medrash into all of this. So nonetheless, there were two parties, a party for the men and a party for the women.
He
He says to seven of his advisors, Lavir Vashti Malka Lefne Melech Beketer Malchut Larot Hamim Vesarim Et Yafya Kitova Marahi. He calls for Vashti, and she should come wearing the crown in front of all the nation and all of the officers, because she's beautiful. But Tma'ein Hamalka Vashti Lavog Bidvar Melech Asher Yada Sarisim Ektov Melech Mod V'Chamata Barab Bo. She refuses to come. He gets really angry, and his anger is burning inside him. Again, why do we need this? Any thoughts? So Rabbi Liebtag offers an unbelievable explanation. He says, perhaps the story of Vashti, if the whole book, again, the book happened, the stories are true, but if the story has an overlay of satire that works through the whole thing, he says perhaps the Vashti story is another piece of that satire. And what is it? It's trying to reflect Hashem's disappointment with Bnei Yisrael. Vashti and the Jewish people actually are corresponding to each other the same way that Ahasuerus, who is the Melech, is corresponding to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is disappointed that what? The Jewish people just don't want him anymore. And perhaps that also answers the fact that you could have a leader. He's an Ish Yehudi, but what's his name? His name is Mordechai. What a non-Jewish name. God looks and says, how could it be? My people, Ish Yehudi, they don't want to come. Their leader has a non-Jewish name. Hagla, they've accepted the galus. It doesn't bother them anymore. They don't yearn for Yirmiyahu's time of turning around. The 70 years have come and gone, and only 40,000 or so of my people have gone back. And what have they replaced? They replaced one biro with another. God says, the same way Vashti won't come in front of the king, the Jewish people won't come in front of me. Unfortunately, the Jewish people are spread out, and the one thing that they're not interested in is God, and they're not interested in the settling of Yerushalayim, the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So it takes Haman, who comes along and notes the same things. He says, you know, the Jews are not interested, Mefuzar Mefurad. They are not connected to anything. They're not loyal to their melech. Comes the Hester Panim of Esther and reminds the Jewish people of where they need to go, what they need to do. And thank God, ultimately, it has a happy ending. But even with its happy ending, it's important to note that even after the Megillah, the Jewish people are still living happily in exile. And perhaps, even though the message is actually not being delivered through the story of the Megillah itself, but the message is a message that is hidden in the Megillah as a story of note to the people that are going to read the Megillah, the first generation post-Megillah's Esther story. God is saying to them, you're still there, and you still have traded one bira for another, and you're still not where you're supposed to be. Perhaps Megillas Esther is actually a story that's reminding the Jewish people of their misplaced priorities and their need to be where they need to be. All right.